Hello and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie and I'm joined once again by Austin here.
Hello.
Today we're talking about something which people all around the world are talking about, which is the latest developments in the Chinese gaming industry. It's not very often that we talk about industry events or the gaming business on this podcast. We generally talk about games we're playing and developments within the game industry from a gamer's perspective, but this time we're taking a little bit of a different perspective on what's actually happening inside the game industry in China from the viewpoint of people who are working inside of it, like myself, or are living inside China and kind of seeing all of these things unfold here in China.
Right, and this is going to have an impact on the industry as a whole worldwide, I think.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, China for a long time has been the largest gaming industry in the world by both revenue and by number of players.
Right, there's a huge financial impact on the industry as a whole, just with China. I mean, just the number of players here is massive.
Yeah, and actually the company which is at the center of this whole issue is Tencent, which is the largest gaming developer and publisher in the world here in China. And they have a lot of hooks into games abroad. They are outright owners of Riot, which is founded in Los Angeles, is the developer of League of Legends.
Also Epic, they're like massive shareholders in
40%,
Epic,
right? Yeah, 40% ownership in Epic Games, which is the developer of one of the hottest games in the world right now, which is Fortnite. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Also Fortnite's competitor, PUBG, they have stake in.
Yeah, they do. That's right. Exactly. Bluehole. I think it's a very small stake in that one. But in any case, Tencent is one of the largest investment companies in the world. Gaming is actually the lion's share of the company, but they're involved in some other things as well. They're, as of last year, I think, November 2017, they're now awarded the distinction of the largest social network company in the world.
Except for WeChat.
It's mostly for WeChat. Yeah, it's Tencent and WeChat, a number of other social media properties.
And they do QQ, I think, right?
They do still do QQ. QQ is kind of the legacy product, I guess, which sort of built the foundation, which WeChat sort of capitalized on. But the company, as of January 2018 this year, was valued somewhere around $580 billion, which at the time valued it higher than Facebook. So hugely influential company. And Tencent is a company which we'll be talking about a lot in this podcast. And they're really at the center of a lot of these developments about the China gaming industry. And one of the headlines which we're seeing a lot, especially over the last week, is that the Chinese gaming industry is sort of stumbling. And the Chinese economy is also stumbling as well. We've seen massive drop in the Chinese stock market valuation. We've seen a lot of big players in the Chinese economy lose a lot of value, including Alibaba and Tencent and Baidu and a lot of these sort of tech giants inside China. And it's basically all about politics. You know, and politics is like the biggest feature of this situation, I think.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's like the top-down control of central Chinese authority. There's all sorts of cultural bureaus, which
it's a bureaucracy to like the max here. It's just kind of everything that needs to be approved through like this and then this process before it actually gets to release as far as gaming goes.
Yeah, exactly. Also, this is the first profit drop for Tencent in over a decade. So, I mean, in China, you know, I've been here.
It's a huge profit drop.
It's $160 billion.
$160 billion.
That's right. Yeah. And I think it's something like a 20% drop in stock valuation this year for Tencent.
Yeah.
And during that time, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has gone up 25%. So, and also the trade war, which is right now escalating between the United States, led by Trump, and the Chinese economy, is also a factor. Although gaming industry is not a specific target of these tariffs, but it is kind of an ancillary factor, which is affecting the larger economy, which is influenced by the gaming industry in particular.
Yeah, but also I think part of the whole thing that's causing this is just the approval process, which has been halted for 4 months now.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most talked about things, I think, is the halt in the approval process. But for anybody who's not familiar, let's back up just a little bit and just explain Tencent. So Tencent is now known as the largest gaming company in the world, but it was founded in 1998 in Shenzhen, which is sort of the mainland China, Hong Kong.
Right.
A large tech metropolis in China, one of the biggest in the country. And Tencent is the world's largest investment corporation, one of the largest internet and technology companies, one of the biggest venture capital firms, and the largest and most valuable gaming company, right, and social media company.
Yeah.
So that's all in one company. Yeah.
It's like a huge company.
It's so huge. Have you ever been to Shenzhen before?
Yeah, I've been to Shenzhen.
Have you ever seen the Tencent headquarters there?
No.
I think it's called the Binhai Mansions. It's like two like massive skyscrapers.
Wow.
Which comprise like the flashiest center of the Tencent headquarters.
Right.
It makes the Google campus look quaint. You know, like if you've been to Facebook or in Mountain View or Google or in these big Silicon Valley tech giant
just
companies.
Makes them look tiny.
Yeah, they look just like a village or something, yeah, compared to like this like gleaming, crazy, dystopian looking skyscraper. Right. So in any case,
what about NetEase? Where is NetEase located? That's probably one of the other largest.
They're located in Guangzhou. Industry. Yeah, they're both in the same province. Shenzhen and Guangzhou are in the same province. Guangzhou is the capital of Guangdong province.
Right.
They're both sort of mainland Hong Kong cities a little bit. NetEase is the number two largest game developer and publisher inside China.
Right.
Tencent gets most of the focus though. I mean, NetEase is involved in a lot of overseas games which are published inside China, including Overwatch. It's probably the most talked about one. But Tencent just has so many games. The largest game in the world is under Tencent management, which is called Honor of Kings.
Right.
Wanda Rongyao, which is much discussed in China and abroad. League of Legends, as we already said, Tencent owns 100% of Riot. Clash of Clans.
Yeah.
Tencent owns 84% of Supercell. They also make Clash Royale, a number of other popular games.
And they have stake in Activision Blizzard, EA, and Capcom, helping bring those games here, right?
Yeah. So Activision Blizzard, Bluehole, which is the creator of PUBG.
Such a bad name for a company, Bluehole. I can't get over that.
I wonder what it means. It must be an allusion to something. I'm not sure what it is, though. Anyway, Epic Games, Ubisoft as well. Tencent has a share in that, and many other companies too. These are just some of the really well-known gaming companies which Tencent is involved in.
And Tencent has Wii Game, which is like,
that's right,
we've talked about that on the podcast before, a competitor. I recently found out through an article I was reading that Wii Game only has just over 70 games, though, which is like a really stark contrast to Steam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, imagine what's involved with getting a game onto Wii Game versus on Steam. I mean, right, how many new games are added to Steam every week? It's probably hundreds.
And Steam, in its current state, exists in a gray area. And we'll get into later what's happening with Steam in China. But, I mean, there's a reason that it's able to do what it does.
Yeah. Real quick, I mean, side point, Steam is not working for a lot of people recently.
Yeah,
I mean,
the last week or so, you haven't been able to access the site. Not, I mean, before they blocked community features and other things, but you could still access the store and use the Steam client with no problem. For the last week or so, we've noticed you can't seem to access the store without a VPN. Now, last night, I wanted to see if a purchase could be made, and I went ahead and was still able to purchase a game in the Chinese region.
That's good, but
we're still having difficulty. The average user doesn't have access to a VPN necessarily in China. And
yeah, we recorded a podcast, I guess it was probably about a year ago or something, talking about platforms in China, and we included Steam and Uplay and Origin and all the other major gaming platforms.
Right.
And Wii Game was one of the ones which we talked about, and we sort of forecasted, as many do, that Wii Game will eventually just take over China completely.
Yeah, but a lot of users, Chinese users, are posting on Weibo and things like that that are like, fuck this shit, and like, I'm gonna find a way to like play Dying Light 2 on Steam somehow. I have to like be able to do that. I don't think that the games I want to play are gonna be available here on Wii Game.
Sure.
And I like, a lot of people are just really, really upset with the possibility of losing access to their Steam accounts. And even if, like, Steam is supposedly going to be, who's partnering with them again?
Perfect World.
Perfect World, yeah. To be having a Chinese Steam client released officially. But there are a ton of games that, I mean, games are going to have to go through the approval process.
It's just going
to
look like Wii Game.
It's going to look like Wii Game. Yeah.
Imagine if there's Steam with 70 games on it. What's the point? That's not really Steam.
Well, what if you've already purchased hundreds of games like we have or something, and now you have to transition to a new client. You lose your entire library. That's a huge deal. No one's going to want to do that.
You probably lose your entire library, right? I mean, how else could it possibly work? I mean, the whole point of switching to this new platform is that it's working within the regulatory framework. And if it is, then all the purchases you made are not valid.
Yeah,
so, maybe you can still access them with a VPN or something. No one really knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
In any case, Steam is really on the ropes right now in China. And it's looking like it might not be a bad time to switch region.
Yeah, but even if they release the client now, with the approval process halted for games, it's unlikely that there's going to be many games on the platform at all.
That might be why we haven't heard anything about the platform last month or two.
And it takes, even if they stop right now or start right now approving games, it still takes like 2 to 3 months for a game to be approved,
right?
So it's like nothing's going to change. Basically, like the rest of the year, as far as the gaming industry in China is concerned, it's kind of fucked.
And how many games are in the queue?
Yeah. So like if you're submitting games now, you're kind of fucked until next year. For some small companies, it's like...
So I'm sure like Valve and Perfect World are looking at this situation going like, well, how can we possibly make a new platform when even existing platforms, even Tencent, which is like the most influential company in like all of Asia.
Yeah, they have like ties with the government and stuff. Yeah,
sure. In any case, there's a lot of interesting developments going on. So what Tencent has done though is they've placed what I thought were a lot of really intelligent bets in that they acquired Riot and they got League of Legends and they've made it hugely successful inside China. It's a really popular game. They have gotten PUBG, the rights to publish that, Fortnite, rights to publish that.
One thing to note on PUBG though is that they still haven't received approval for the desktop versions of PUBG in Asia, in China, and they can't approve it for monetizing it on the mobile version. So they've got like 170 million downloads that they can't really make any money from.
Right. So the thinking is that Tencent positioned themselves in a really good place by getting exclusive rights to publish these games inside China. They're the hottest games, they're the biggest games. There's a ton of interest in these games. So they managed to successfully nail that down. And now the regulators are stopping them from even monetizing what they've already acquired.
Yeah.
So they've already got the rights to release these games inside China, but they can't do it. So as you said, the PC versions of both of these games, PUBG and Fortnite, are still not released inside China. So Chinese players who are like in internet bars playing PUBG, they're still using internet accelerators to play the overseas version of PUBG, just like we talked about in this podcast when we recorded the PUBG podcast a few months ago. And as you mentioned also, this is super crazy too. PUBG Mobile has been so successful and it's really seriously cannibalized the desktop PUBG.
Yeah.
I think the user base of the PC PUBG has dropped by something like 50% in the last few months.
And we know people in the gaming group that switched from playing the PC version to just playing the mobile version.
Sure, and you can see why. It's so much easier.
There's been more development with bugs and other things being patched out. The development of the mobile version has been way better than the PC version.
Yeah, it really seems like with PUBG, at least, the mobile version is probably the future. It feels like on the PC platform, a lot of players have moved on to something else.
Absolutely.
There was a discussion about this. There's a TechNode WeChat group, which is a discussion group for technology in China. And there was a lot of discussion about this, an extended discussion about this topic exactly, about Tencent and about the China gaming industry. And it's difficult to break down what's really going on because there's so much opacity within the regulatory structure. So apparently what's being discussed is that there's a lot of different angles to this. One is that the Chinese authorities have become much more assertive about blocking news and entertainment, which they consider to be vulgar, violent, or not in keeping with Communist Party values, which is something that we discussed in the PUBG podcast, because we discussed that
the blood,
the central government decided that the game violates socialist principles. Socialist principles being something totally unclear. No one really knows exactly what
it's
that
like,
means.
How is it doing that?
Right. So we're looking at the game at the time and we're saying, okay, well, the game is about like murdering other people. Is that opposed socialist values? No one really knows. And then we're thinking like, well, what can Bluehole or Tencent possibly do to make it conform to socialist values? What does that even mean? So they just change the blood color or they remove blood and somehow it gets approved. And it just doesn't seem to make much sense. But inside China, there is so much concern inside China about the negative psychological effects that video games are having on children in particular. And so there's a huge amount of fear over addiction, specifically, like video game addiction in China.
I mean, gambling as it has been seen with the loot boxes and all that stuff has been a huge thing, not just in China, but I mean, that's been a huge concern for the Chinese government is loot boxes in games.
Yeah, they were required by law to reveal loot box statistics, I think, in like May of 2017, sometime last year. And so I think this has pretty seriously affected the business of loot boxes. And some companies have had pretty creative ways of getting around it, one of which is Blizzard. Blizzard, there was a headline for a news story about this, which said Blizzard avoids China's loot laws by selling Overwatch in-game currency. So they have to reveal the loot box probabilities if you're spending money for the loot box.
Wow.
And so what Blizzard did instead was that in-game currency is sold for real money with loot boxes thrown in for free. And so if they do that, they don't need to reveal the probabilities.
Wow, that's
so
clever.
It's such a Chinese thing. You know, it's like burdensome restriction goes into some market.
And finding a loophole.
Exactly. Yeah. And you find some way to sidestep it. And for people who've spent time inside China or have spent time interacting with the Chinese market, this is such a common reaction. There's an overstep on behalf of the centralized authority, which wants to create really burdensome restrictions. And then the market finds some way to kind of sidestep it. So it'll be interesting to see what happens here. I mean, perhaps this 5-month block on game approvals. And for anyone who's not familiar with this, no game has been approved by the regulatory process in China since March of this year. Yeah. And so we're recording this in mid-August. So it's been 5 months since a game has been even approved. And the question is, will they even go back to approving games? Will the criteria for games which get approved change? What is kind of really going on here? And no one seems to really know totally. What Tencent is saying, though, is that this is a temporary block, which they're going to get around eventually. They say that they're confident that both PUBG and Fortnite on PC are going to be approved. And these organizations they're two regulatory bodies. One is the National Radio and Television Administration and the Ministry of Culture and Tourism. And it's kind of funny that Radio and Television Administration and Culture and Tourism. It's like you guys
managing the
game. Yeah, exactly. Like, you guys can't make a game. It's like there's such a big game industry in China. You would think that the regulatory apparatus could be like updated to more accurately reflect what it's doing. But
now for Tencent, though, to say that this is a temporary block is not like, I mean, they have so much money. It's not a huge deal. And they have money in other ventures to be able to cover their asses. But for smaller gaming companies, this is a huge deal.
It's a huge deal for everybody, including Tencent, for sure. I mean,
definitely. I mean,
most of their business is on games.
Value has gone down a lot.
Most of their business is about games. Yeah. I mean, most of Tencent, the majority of the company is about games.
Yeah.
And another big development recently is Monster Hunter World.
I want to talk about that. Yeah, Monster Hunter World pulled down 5 days after release.
Yeah.
And some of the game does not fulfill regulatory requirements, I guess.
Right, right.
So they gave users the option to refund with no reason and within a week. And they got a 30 RMB coupon in addition. Failure to refund, though, results in the ability to still be able to play the game, but they don't guarantee access to certain services. So the game basically could be broken. They might not update the game or whatever, you know. So it's like a huge deal. People were really upset. It was one of the most popular games on Wii Game.
Yeah, it's a really big game. It's a really big release.
It was like a 91% positive ratings or whatever on Wii Game from their users.
Yeah, so Monster Hunter World, major release, another one acquired by Tencent, gets released inside China just days after its debut. Regulators pulled the operating license. And a lot of analysts have attributed that to the game's dark content. I haven't played the game, but apparently
it's not that dark.
It's like supernatural monsters and it's violent, I guess.
It's a little violent, but it's not like an incredibly gruesome game, I don't think.
Interesting. I don't know, but big release that China's not getting. Yeah. We've been waiting for Rocket League for how long? I mean, there's like nothing even remotely controversial in that. So it doesn't seem like it's just a violence issue.
Yeah.
Last year, the state-run People's Daily went after Tencent by saying Honor of Kings was so addictive that school children were skipping their homework to play it late into the night. And Tencent responded by putting in time limits for players under 18.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, if you play the game for a certain number of hours, then a dialogue comes up that says, hey, you should take a break. And if you don't, then it cuts you off. And it's like, no more playing the game for like 24 hours. And they've done this, I guess, because there have been all sorts of bizarre deaths from people. So, I mean, supposedly...
Like dying at Wong bars.
Yeah, dying at internet bars. I mean, people have... I'm not sure if anyone even knows, like, the inaccurate number of, like, these deaths. Like, how common they really are, but...
Yeah. Well, also, it's hard to say because of the censorship here, you know? I mean, like, really, it could be a huge number, and the government could just be censoring the accurate portrayal of what's actually happening.
That's right. That's very possible. Yeah. According to what I've heard, there are 368 million online gamers in China, which is more than the total U.S. population. And according to that same report, 1/5 of Chinese teens play games 4 to 5 hours a day or more.
Wow.
So, yeah, 20% of Chinese teenagers playing 4 to 5 hours of games. I'm trying to imagine, like, how could they possibly do that with all the schoolwork and all responsibilities that Chinese students have, which are so much more than Western students?
Yeah.
But apparently gaming addiction is a major issue. Aside from people... students and young people dying inside internet bars from playing games for dozens or hundreds of hours straight. They're also dying in these gaming addiction treatment camps.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that. That's pretty brutal.
Totally brutal and very mysterious and illegal as well.
Yeah.
Chinese parents, psychiatrists, and media often describe these as wangyin, which is sort of like internet addiction, I guess is how you describe it. And it's a clinical disorder, which is called digital heroin in China, and it's said to afflict 24 million young people,
which is
a huge audience. Yeah, and so they have these gaming addiction treatment camps, which use medication, brain scans, and military discipline to treat addicts.
It's pretty like intense from what I've read about them, just like really, really terrible treatment.
There are pictures online of like Chinese teenagers who have their heads shaved, and they have this like brain apparatus on their head. And it looks just like sci-fi, it's like Black Mirror or something like that. Like it just looks like science fiction horror. And a lot of these facilities are apparently run by ex-military doctors, some of which have experience treating serious addicts, like heroin addicts. One death was highly publicized in 2017.
At one of these treatment places, right?
Yeah. Well, there's been a number of deaths at them, but one in particular got kind of global notoriety. This was at a facility called the Positive Energy Education Center.
Wow, sounds so pleasant.
Yeah, I love the euphemism for this. It's like, oh, a re-education camp. Like, you're just going to come here to learn more. You know, just no one doesn't like learning.
And it'll be positive.
Yeah, positive energy. That's all it is. It's all about positive energy.
Just come feel the vibes, man.
Exactly. Just heal up, okay? Total cost of this camp, 22,000 RMB, which is like $3,000, $4,000 USD. And so one of these kids died there, and they did a post-mortem examination and found that he suffered more than 20 external injuries and just scars all over his body from his head to
his
toes. They're
like beating him.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, we're still trying to figure out like what happened to him.
It's like, it's not clear. He's like bruised. There's a knife in him.
You know, he didn't respond to the positive energy that well. It's like some people have adverse reactions to the positive energy. But there's so much weird stuff going on. And I mean, you know, secret illegal facilities are kind of par for the course in China in general. So this is something we hear about a lot. But apparently there's a lot of deaths inside internet bars and inside these facilities and a whole bunch of weird stuff going on. So this is kind of what China's dealing with. And I think that regulators are looking at this situation and they're saying, we have to do something to stop this.
I think talking about the censorship, I was recently reading an article about just the youth, like millennials in China, not having access to Google, Facebook, Twitter, not even knowing what these services are. and not having access to uncensored news and things like that. And most of the kids in a survey said that they don't really care about having access to this news or not. And they think that it could create more discontent among people and that China's still developing and it won't help with the development of China.
Right.
But like, due to that, there is like, I've met a lot of people that are like, man, America seems like a really dangerous place and you've got guns, and shootings, school shootings going on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, you've got crazy shit going on in China. It's just a lot of it doesn't get published.
Right.
So like a lot of people are just disillusioned and have nationalist pride and assume that like nothing bad's going on.
Right.
And they just accept the charade that the government puts on, as truth.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're in North Korea, you're very unlikely to be mugged in the street.
Yeah.
You know, but if you make the wrong move, your whole family can be executed.
Yeah.
Right. So which one of those is really safety? I mean, there's drawbacks and trade-offs to each of these systems. If you have liberty and an armed populace, then you also have some kids accidentally shooting themselves.
Yeah.
You know, you have horrible things when you put people in a situation where they're forced to exercise responsibility. But in a lot of ways, China is kind of sort of growing into a nanny state. But I mean, at the same time, it's also like a very reckless, dangerous place. I mean, if you look at a average intersection in China, just like right outside, you just see like just reckless endangerment just everywhere. And so China has that as well. I mean, it's very difficult to describe, you know, what safety really even means in China. I mean, because on one hand, there's almost no violent crime here at all. Certainly, I mean, none that expats would have to worry about.
But there is like, I've seen people like there is in my, just down the street from your house when Christian was living with me, he saw like a guy with a bloody shirt with someone chasing him with a butcher's knife. And like people kill each other in the streets here with like knives and stuff.
I've never seen anything like that.
I don't think it's like common, but it happens.
I mean, sure. You know, it's a city of 14 million people.
Yeah.
You know, like there are violent events, but I've never felt like I was in danger of a violent crime. I've never known anyone who was like victimized by anything like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure it happens, but I mean, in the United States, I mean, for example, I mean, come on, like you're the chance of running into like violent crime on the street is like far, far higher. I mean, so much higher.
I feel safer here especially as a foreigner here most of the time, other than maybe a few circumstances, than I do in like downtown LA or something.
Sure, sure. Yeah, no doubt. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. I guess the next shoe to drop will be, you know, when games start getting approved again.
Yeah.
And when they start getting approved, if there will be any new criteria which is required of game developers or publishers to meet. One interesting theory which I've heard is that the regulatory bodies are not actually concerned about violence so much. The real concern is the business model. And that would be loot boxes and like in-app purchases.
Right.
So those do condone a certain addictive type behavior, like daily login rewards.
Well, I mean, that would explain why Rocket League isn't available, because like there's a ton of content in that, and I would imagine they want to just sell content in that and probably have loot boxes or something like that. But it doesn't explain why something like Monster Hunter World would be pulled down.
Well, Monster Hunter World has none of that, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have any of that.
Yeah, exactly. You just pay for the game and that's it. There's no in-app purchases that I've heard of in that game.
Right.
Right.
And the only thing that could possibly be would be violence. And it's not an over-the-top violent game like, say, I don't know, like Max Payne or like... No, Max Payne isn't even that bad. Bayonetta, that's pretty over-the-top violence and sexual and like...
Yeah, I don't think anyone in China even knows what Bayonetta is. I mean, that's like an obscure game as far as China goes. But, you know, in the past, we've seen a lot of, you know, government getting out of the way of industry so that the economy of China can grow really quickly. And now we're seeing the opposite of that. Now we're seeing the government take a social stand, which goes directly against the business interests of the most powerful companies in China and in Asia.
I think we've seen just in the past few years, China really starting to crack down and close off again for like, kind of go against what it's been since like the 80s, basically it started to open up more, and now we're seeing China really close itself off again from the rest of the world.
Yeah, no doubt. So, I mean, if it is actually the business model which is being targeted here, which would be like the free-to-play business model or the in-app purchase business model or loot boxes, I mean, if there are major comprehensive restrictions on those, that would have a cataclysmic effect on China's gaming industry, because those business models totally dominate China's gaming industry. So if those do come under fire, that would be just
the end
catastrophe. I mean, it would be just a redefining event. I mean, it would have to grow into something totally different, and it would be hard to picture what that would mean. I mean, so many thousands of companies would be affected. I mean, you know, my employer is a developer and a publisher, and for now, there's just not a lot of publishing going on. So that part of the business is like just fairly inactive. I mean, basically dormant. And it's just going to crush a lot of companies. I mean, imagine how many companies there are in Chengdu or in Shanghai or Beijing or Shenzhen or what have you, who are interested in publishing foreign games inside China and just have nothing they can do at all. I mean, if Tencent can't get it done, then no one can.
Yeah.
So, and typically in the past, these types of restrictions have really affected smaller companies which do not have the guanxi or the influence that Tencent has. So, and I think PUBG was a good example of that. You know, PUBG becomes very popular inside China. People start using VPNs and internet accelerators to play the game abroad. And the central government comes out and says this game does not adhere to socialist principles.
Yeah.
And the common thought at the time was, all right, well, that's the end of that. You know, like it's a game about murdering people. So it's not going to fit the bill no matter what kind of, you know, surface level changes are made. But I mean, you know, in whatever they did, like Tencent worked it out and they're like, oh, solved the problem, took the blood out. You know, it's like, okay. So the message has been pretty clear for a long time that a lot of these restrictions, it seems like Tencent is sort of above them. Tencent can find some way to find a solution to these seemingly impassable blockades. Yeah. And in this case, Tencent is not having any luck at all, and they're taking major hits because of it.
It's pretty crazy. I mean, you think it's hard to imagine how this is going to affect things in the future. And I mean, like, if nothing improves, it's like pretty crazy. Like, just sounds like a barren future without games.
Well, you know, on the positive side, most of the games in China, we've talked about this before. I mean, not games that we're interested in, you know what I mean? A lot, I mean, like on Wii Game, for example, it's like there's 70 games on Wii Game, which you say probably the vast majority of them are of no interest to foreigners.
Absolutely.
You know, because the culture of games in China is quite different from the culture of games in America. So the types of games that are really popular, like in the App Store here, for example, you just got a new iPhone. Are you in the China App Store or in the US App Store?
I'm in the US App Store.
Okay. So I have China and US App Store accounts on my iPhone. And every once in a while, I'll log into the Chinese one just to kind of see what's trending, see what's happening, especially see what Apple is featuring, because I think they're really good curators of highlighting the best apps and games on the App Store. And it's hard to not be shocked by how different the two are.
Yeah.
Just the types of games, the mechanics of Chinese games, the art style, the interface, you know, the pitches for the games, even the icons, the artwork, the names.
Yeah.
I mean, the culture of games in China is just so incredibly different from in the West with what we're used to. Is it possible that these series of changes make the Chinese gaming industry look a little bit more like the one outside China? Hard to say. I don't know. But maybe that wouldn't be such a bad change, even though it would be bad for business.
Yeah, it would be terrible for business.
Right. I mean, I think the game industry for a long time, I've been thinking about this and talking about this with people at conferences for about 5 or 6 years about, you know, where is the line between making good games and making a good business?
Right.
You know, I mean, a lot of the largest game developers and publishers around the world are kind of dealing with this issue. Are we ethically wrong to make what we know are bad games if they earn a boatload of money?
Right.
And it's a difficult question to answer. It just depends on kind of what your priorities are. But
I mean, I don't think I would say it's not ethically wrong. I think it's the consumer's responsibility to, you know, determine whether or not they want to spend money. There's just a lot of dumb consumers out there that'll pay money and like
that's blindly. True, but you can use that justification to sell like all sorts of horrible things like dick pills.
Yeah.
You know, you'd be like, well, if you don't like it, then just don't buy it. You know, I mean, that rationale can justify a lot of shady things, I think.
Well, I mean,
and there have been a lot of shady things in the game industry, too. I mean, you know, game companies which offer pretty terrible things in exchange, you know, to get psychological hooks into into players who are sort of mentally weak, you know, who can. It's sort of like the gambling industry or the tobacco industry, which preys upon people's psychological weaknesses. And so China can see this happening and is actively involving itself. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens from here.
It could be a positive thing long-term, potentially.
It could indeed. I mean,
we'll see. But it's definitely really terrible financially right now for businesses.
Really terrible. That's right. Actually, I had someone who was an intern of mine in my previous employer a couple years ago contact me yesterday. And I hadn't talked to him in a couple years. He's a young guy with a degree in game design, I believe, from Holland. And he's looking for a new job in China. And he asked, you know, what? Do you have any suggestions on me seeking a job? I'm like looking all across the country, just trying to find a cool job to get my foot in the door. And I kind of thought, my first thought was don't look inside China because the circumstances are just not that great inside China right now, especially if you're not experienced or credentialed enough to get a respectable position inside an influential company. And it doesn't just have to do with the economy of the game industry in China right now. It also has to do with just the regulatory restrictions inside China that exist for all foreigners. So right now it's, I mean, getting more and more difficult for foreigners to even get visas to work legally inside China. So a lot of expats are leaving China or choosing not to come to China for this reason. And yeah, it's a tough time right now for the Chinese gaming industry. So hopefully this doesn't last too long. And I hope that it becomes better pretty soon. We'll see. Once we get into the fall, things should change.
We'll see. So, what games are you playing right now?
I've still been playing Dead Cells, getting so close to finishing this game. I just can't believe how much I love this game. This is definitely, I think, Dead Cells and Celeste are my top two games of the year so far, no question. And I'm just amazed because I played Dead Cells for probably about 20 hours on Steam, loved it so much. And then it came out on Switch, and I sort of debated whether or not I should get it because I knew I'd have to play through all that again, you know, I'd start at the beginning, lose all my progress. And I thought, you know, whatever, I'll buy it, just see how it goes. I bought the game, I got hooked on it again.
Yeah,
just like the first time.
Pick up and play anytime, anywhere, it's so good.
Yeah, so now I put more time into the Switch version than I have in the Steam version. But now I'm getting very close to finishing it.
Yeah, you were saying, I think you got to the last boss or something?
I did, just about 2 hours ago. I was at the last boss. Like half his life is gone, and then my girlfriend comes over. She's like, "Hey, check this out!" And I like look over her for 1 second. I get killed.
Damn.
Yeah. But I don't feel bad about it. It's a totally enjoyable game, and dying a whole bunch is just part of the game. So
yeah, absolutely.
How about yourself?
Also been playing Dead Cells and been intending to pick up Celeste, but my account was a little bit low, so I'm gonna have to re-up and do that. Although after I do that, I think that'll be my last purchase, and then cracking the Switch and playing a ton of games as soon as Atmosphere comes out. But I've been doing that and working on the Plague Knight DLC for Shovel Knight.
Oh yeah, you finished the Spectre of Torment, right?
Finished Spectre of Torment, and I want to finish Plague Knight, and King of Cards is supposed to be coming out soon.
There's not been any news on that at all.
They've been like at various gaming things, demo and gameplay and stuff.
That was like months ago. I think there's no new news in the last like 2 months.
There was a post, they were talking about it coming out soon.
Yeah, it's supposed to be this fall.
Just on the news channels or whatever on Switch, it was talking about it.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, that should be cool.
You're finishing the third campaign in Shovel Knight now, right?
Third campaign.
How far are you through that?
Like pretty early on. In maybe a third?
Okay, right on.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shovel Knight, absolutely brilliant. Loved
so
it so much.
So good, dude.
Yeah, I played
so
through
charming. The... charming. It's like borderline perfect.
It is. I agree. Borderline perfect. That is really one of the best.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope that you enjoyed this exploration into what's happening in the Chinese gaming industry. If you have any insight into this, feel free to get in touch with us through our website at chundugaming.com. You can also find us in our WeChat discussion group. There's information on that on the website. If you're interested in checking out previous episodes of the podcast, you can find that on our website, and you can also find it in Apple Podcasts or whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this podcast, we'd really appreciate a review on iTunes. And thanks for listening.
Later.